And it's time to say good afternoon to my guest. It's Alistair Nisbet. Good afternoon, Alistair.
Hi, Andy.
And tell us, what have you got going on down at the No Fort on Tuesday?
Well, it's a big day for us. We've got 100 children, pupils from four schools across Dorset, are going to be dancing the Palais Glide, which I'll tell you a bit more about, and celebrating the launch of a project that we've all been working on since September called Children of World War II.
Excellent. And just give us a bit more detail. What does that involve?
Well, it's a series, it's a drama series. It's an audio drama series in eight parts, each 10 minutes long, produced by children from these four schools. So we've got two schools in Weymouth, which is St John's Primary and St Nicholas and St Lawrence Primary, and another primary school, the Bovington Primary Academy, over at Bovington, and the fourth school is St Mary's Middle School at Puddletown. So we've got year six and year eight, so they're ranging from age about 10 to 13, something like that. And what we wanted to do with this project was we wanted to put today's children into the shoes of children, young people, 80 years ago. And so we found and recorded oral histories with a handful, half a dozen people in their very late 80s and 90s. And then we worked with a big team, so there were eight of us working on it all together since September. We basically took them through the whole process of listening to these dramas, talking about World War II, visiting the node, being evacuees for the day, and then devising drama based on the true stories. So, and that was a big part of it. So we had two script writers working with us.
And did the children have any input into the stories as well?
They did. I mean, they were, it's based on true stories, so they had a huge amount of input, actually. So the first thing we did after their day at the nose was we went back to, two of us went into to each of the classes for a day, and we just talked about how you turn true stories into drama, how you, what a script looks like, how you write a script when everything has to be in dialogue, which of course is something that they're not really used to at all. And so then we put them, we put whole classes into individual groups, and we got them just writing a few lines, then recording them, then listening to them, you know, listening to playing them to the whole class. And that was quite interesting. We whittled the groups down because we didn't need that number of children, you know, producing the final versions. But everybody has had an involvement, and some of the ones who weren't so involved in the actual drama and recording it and writing it and performing it were involved in the singing and the music. So each episode has got quite a lot of music and singing in it.
And were the children surprised at some of the things they learned from the people who were children 80 years ago?
Well, that's a really good question. I think they probably were. I mean, probably best illustrated with a story. They liked some of the stories, really appealed to them. And one of them in particular was from a man called John Lomax in Dorchester, who told us in his oral history how he and his best mate used to get into the pictures for free in Weymouth, which was a good trick, for free, especially if there was an A-rated film showing, which people with longer memories will know that that was a film where if you were under the age of 15, you had to go with an adult. And what he and his mate would do very cannily is they would hang around outside the cinema when perhaps a new film they wanted to see was just coming out, like the new Sherlock Holmes or something like that, and they'd wait for a friendly looking young American soldier to come along, a GI, of which there were hundreds and thousands of them in Dorset, of course, from 1943, and they would greet him with a, "Hey mister, can we come into the pictures with you, because they won't let us in on our own," to which he would usually reply, "Sure, of course, I'll even pay for you." And so that, and he would pay the sixpence or whatever it was for them to go to the pictures. And that was quite a good wee. So that's a little sketch from one of the Puddletown episodes, which they found quite amusing.
And I think you mentioned you were talking to somebody who was living down at Tynham before they got forced to leave.
Well, that's Roy Martin. Yes, he was born and bred in Wall. He now lives in Southampton. But he didn't live at Tynham, but he was in one of the 104 houses, farmhouses, that were requisitioned for the American Army in that big training area that was taken over. So it was 270 people, something like that, were uprooted 3 weeks before Christmas in 1943 in a freezing, bitterly cold winter when it was well below freezing. And his Aunt Sue lived at a place called Hollow Ditch, which is at West Creech, which is just inside the exclusion area, and she was given 3 weeks to move. And so it was very poignant for him to talk about that. Yeah. And I think it was the class at Bovington who actually retold his story. Yeah. And I think they found that quite moving. Yeah. And funnily enough, we found a book about Tynham with a whole page of pictures of the farmhouse, the really nice looking farmhouse at Hollow Ditch, including one cow, which has to have been Aunt Sue's house cow that she milked for milk and butter for herself and for her family.
Mm. And do you know what happened to them? They were forced out 3 weeks before Christmas.
They were forced out three weeks before Christmas.
Do you know what happened to them?
Well, I think she ended up at Kimmeridge. I think she found somewhere to live at Kimmeridge. Mm. I don't think she lived all that much longer after, actually. I think she died a few years later. She was a widow. She wasn't that old, but it was something that really sort of scarred her, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Well, the people from Tynham never went back, did they?
They never went back. No, they never went back. And the last resident there, who as a child, who went to the school in Tynham, I think has just died recently.
Oh, dear.
But, I mean, there is still this very, very sort of faint connection in that, you know, Roy and his cousin is still around, I believe, as well, who used to go there and stay on the farm and make butter from the milk from the house cow.
Sounds amazing. Now then, can you just give us the details of what's happening, on whereabouts, what sort of time? And
well, so it's all happening during the morning at the Nose, at Nose Fort, and we've got all of our groups of young people are coming during the course of the morning. They're probably going to be coming in waves, because 100 children all at once was going to be a bit much to cope with. So there will be something going on through pretty much all of the morning, basically in three sessions. We've got an actor, a professional actor, who specialises in kind of period work, and her name's Tamsin Fessy, from a company called Angel Exit, and she's going to be in role as a 1940s dance instructor. So she's going to instruct them how to dance the Palais Glide. Now, most people will have probably seen people dancing the Palais Glide, but they won't necessarily have heard it or watched it being danced, because there's not many clips around of that happening. It's that dance when everybody's arm in arm, and they sort of go one way and they go the other, and they rock backwards and forwards. And we've recorded our two musicians, our pianist Freya Russell, and our clarinet player Kathy Prince, have recorded the theme tune for that. And so we'll be. They will be dancing it to a, you know, a very authentic tune from the original music score from 1930s, probably pre-1930s. Mm. And in our drama, it's one of our characters. She in her oral history, she talked about after on VE Day, all she did was dance the Palais Glide. And so in the drama, one of the characters has been through a real ordeal after the bombing of Chapel A in Weymouth. She says to her family, when this war's over, I'm going to dance the Palais Glide all the way from the Jubilee Clock to the Ritz Theatre, which is what everybody did, actually.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a bit of fun. Everybody having a go.
I think it would be good fun. And so and we're launching the 8 episodes on that day.
Now then, you're going to be, hopefully you'll be able to send me a report in on Tuesday, and we'll play
it
out.
We're going to do our very best to send you a report in, yes. I think we'll get some of our older students to go around with cameras and microphones and see what they can come up with.
Well, that'll be great. Lovely. Well, thanks for coming in today, and we look forward to hearing all about it on Tuesday.
Great. Thanks, Andy.
Cheers.